Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future. Living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow, mad cow, mad cow, line dance song.
Hey, Sound Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. Sound Guy and QT with you as normal here. And our first guest should be calling in just a few moments. And we have two big guests for you today. We're anticipating the first one momentarily. The QT, I'm back to work tomorrow. I'm going to be heading to Idaho Northwest Pro, going right over the state line. We'll be at Charlie's Bar tomorrow in State Line, Idaho.
Many of our turnbuckle turmoil fans have asked me, when is Sign Guy going to make his peak ascent into eastern Washington? That means, when will you touch the crest of Snoqualmie Pass going east?
I should be there sometime tomorrow morning, but our guest has arrived. Let's bring her on right away. Roxy Astor, welcome to the program.
Thank you. We made it finally. Yes.
We did.
We're here.
We are. And
I'm
going to thank you for being on.
Like, I got to get home.
Well, since today is your first time with us, I'm going to throw you out the traditional first-timer question to start things. What led to you getting into the business of pro wrestling?
Wow. Okay. And I've been asked this like a million times, and I think sometimes I'll have a different aspect on every answer. But in my situation, like, I did not grow up watching pro wrestling. I'm from Seattle, Washington, and there wasn't a lot of big wrestling names except for, you know, like the old wrestling, but it wasn't something on my TV until I moved to Los Angeles, which was in the 80s. And, you know, I would watch the cartoons on Saturday morning. I think I was like 21 maybe. And that's when I saw GLOW, but I would actually watch WWF at the time. And then GLOW was after. So my interest started getting into WWF, not E, but F. And then I started watching GLOW, and I was like, wow, what is this? And actually, it was Aunt Kitty's 94th birthday yesterday. So we did something on Facebook. I don't know if you saw that. Aunt Kitty, the Bad Girls manager.
Yes, I didn't see that yet.
Oh, yeah. So how I got into it was just watching WWF, turning on GLOW. They were looking for new people for season 3 and 4, and then just going for that audition.
Being from up here in our neck of the woods in Washington, the Pacific Northwest, like you said, it wasn't really a hotbed of wrestling per se,
mm-hmm.
compared to a lot of places, but we had a lot of guys that came through that went on to be legendary names like Roddy Piper and Buddy Rose, Jimmy Snuka. Were you somewhat familiar with the names here in the Northwest, or was that completely foreign until you saw the WWF?
That was completely foreign until I saw them. And you know what? That is actually, and I'm going to be honest, news to me that I did not know that they were from there. So you know what? You just schooled me a little bit.
We like to educate here.
Yeah, I love now, it. I love it.
And when you got to GLOW, they'd been on for a couple of years at that point, but wrestling was red hot at that point in time. You had several companies that had national television via syndication or through cable TV. Did you pay attention to a lot of the other national wrestling companies at that time just to kind of get a feel for what was going on in the industry, or did you focus primarily on what you were doing with GLOW?
I think, you know what, I don't know how my interest with WWS came around, but I'm thinking, was Miss Elizabeth, what year was she? I just remember this whole wrestling back in the day that was so unique to me compared to how it is now. It was just so, it was fun. It was so different. And WWF kind of drew me in. Now, I didn't know about other organizations with wrestling, but I did like WWF. And the fact that you did see, you know, women, but they were managers. And then I think after, even like recently, like I look back and some of these other wrestlers that were like in the 60s and 70s, I'm like, wow. I mean, there's like a whole history that I honestly did not know until GLOW, and I got more fascinated by, you know what, there was women there way before us. They did stuff that, I mean, stuff we wouldn't even do or couldn't do. So, you know, my thing is anybody that comes before somebody else, you know, you got to give them a little respect. So to be on GLOW, the respect was for season 1 and 2. The fact that they got up and did it, and I just knew I wanted to be a part of something that was just so different and unique and not like WWF. I didn't want to walk out a guy. I wanted to walk out myself, you know. So that was the difference with that. I was more of an independent person. I did not want to walk out anybody.
I can definitely understand that. Now, obviously you weren't really from a wrestling background going into GLOW. When you were chosen to take part, what was the training like, and what was the process of going from training to going on to their live shows?
Well, I think the process kind of, you know, when we arrived in Las Vegas, and, you know, I always say everybody's going to have a different look of how they saw things. I arrived and saw about 100 very unique looking women, all shapes and sizes. And the ones that were just real, real big, you thought, wow, like I could see her as that. And I could see really cool characters. I kind of questioned myself, like, I really don't fit into that. I don't fit into that group. And I'm like, okay, where am I going to be? And I thought, okay, I'm struggling. I don't know if I'm even going to make it. I just knew that, okay, when it came to training, that I was going to go above and beyond whatever they threw at us. So if, you know, if Matt Simber's saying to me, hey, Roxy Astor, your ass is too big, I'm going to be like, okay, I'm going to start working out harder. I'll show you. So I never really took it as a bad thing for me. I took it as, he would also say, Matt Simber, you're going to hate yourself 20 years from now when you see this on TV. And right there in my head, I'm like, okay, we do the training in the morning, and we would write out our matches, you know, kayfabe is dead, and we do our thing. But I would also add in running every day so I could have the stamina in the ring. To me, that's very important. If you can't breathe in the ring, then how are you going to be able to do some of the moves? And smoking, I never smoke. To this day, I don't smoke, and I think that has a lot to how I could actually stay and keep going. And the running really helped, besides doing the training for about 6 months.
In the last few years, there's been a lot of interest in GLOW because Netflix released their version of GLOW, which is kind of a fictitious retelling of what happened during the original GLOW. You have,
right,
you've seen the emergence of the GLOW cruise. A lot of people have been watching the documentary that was made on the original GLOW. In the last few years, what's it been like seeing sort of a reemergence in popularity of your version of GLOW?
Well, okay, my version of GLOW really now is after GLOW. I don't know if you're aware of it, but in 2014, I did a Kickstarter to raise $5,000 and reached out to the fans and said, you know what, I want to do a stage show with the original GLOW girls and have the fans come out and see us, and because they're always asking us questions on Facebook or they want to know things. And so I thought, you know what, let's see if this works. And I said to myself, it was October 25th, 2014 when we had our first Afterglow fan party after raising the money. We had Matilda there, Godiva, Sunny, MTV. There was about 10, 11 girls there, Gremlina. And it was really good to get these girls together. Now, I had never met Dallas from season one, who I adore now. She's a good friend of mine. And I had never met Matilda, who is one of my best friends. And Sunny and I weren't that close in Glow, so she became one of my best friends. So I started with the Afterglow the first time. And I said, if this is a hit, if I feel like there's interest, then I'm going to move on to something else. So that's when we were at RuPaul's, and I decided to do the first Afterglow cruise. So I actually produced the first cruise. I produced the second cruise. I produced the third cruise. And then we did a play called the Afterglow 80s Musical Experience, where we had five Glow girls. It was Debbie, it was Dallas, Sunny, Matilda, me, MTV. We did a play about our younger selves. So that was like, I needed to take like a year off from the cruises. We were going to go on the cruise just last April, but with everything going on before everything happened, I was going to move it out anyways. So I think right now, you know, Glow Netflix, they were supposed to have their season out in, I think, June, and I always throw a Glow Netflix party. And so then with COVID, you know, everything got held up, and they're going to go for their last season, the Glow Netflix. And they're probably going to film it after, you know, after January, because I think they got to have that ending. Like we had our four seasons. I think they're going to get their fourth season. And it's just, it's kind of quiet right now, Glow-wise, but Afterglow is kind of crazy. I'm keeping it like that. I want to keep the name out there. I want to keep the girls out there because there are some good things going on with Afterglow. And a lot of people are kind of watching what's going on. We had Godiva, who was on To Tell the Truth. Sunny and I did Let's Make a Deal, and we both won. And we did Dr. Phil's show. Somebody, one of the girls did, I think it was Bachelor, The Bachelor, Little Egypt, and Ursula. So to get the girls out there, and to me, anything Glow is good. So there was confusion with the Glow Netflix and how happy we were in that. I think it was just confusing of how to tell the fans that we don't know what to tell you guys. You know, this is something that's, it's like us, but yet it's apart from us. And the fans would ask us on Facebook, well, why aren't you in there? I'm like, oh, what are we supposed to do? You know, call the production company? You know, this is something they're doing. But either way, it's keeping Glow out there. And the Afterglow has been going strong, 2014, and it's still going strong.
Well, at this time, my co-host QT is standing by, and I think he has a couple of questions as well. So, QT, go ahead.
Sure. Oh, okay. Thank you, Sign Guy. Hi, Miss Roxy.
Hi, QT. I love that name. It's cute.
Yes, it stands for quite terrific. Yes.
How are you?
Well, oh, I'm doing fine. Miss Roxy, you told Sign Guy you grew up in Seattle in the 1970s. Were you familiar with Seattle's children icon, J.P. Patches, who lived in the city dump?
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Did a flashback just come back? And he wore patches back then. Am I right?
Yes.
He was like, he looked like a, like that was his look, and he had patches all over him. J.P. Patches. Yes. Wow. That was like a blast from my past.
How do you think a J.P. Patches, Boris S. Wart tag team would have done in Glow?
Gosh, I think that would have been great. JP was so original. I mean, seriously, I'm picturing JP right now. He was almost like a, wasn't he like a clown but with patches on him?
Yes, he was, yes.
Okay,
uh-huh.
See, how would I know that if I didn't know who that was? And not a lot of people know who JP Patches was. I have not heard that name in so long. That would have been great. Are you talking about a female version?
No, Boris S. Wart was the second meanest man in the world, and he tormented J.P. Patches.
see, I just remember JP, but the fact that you said tormented, they could have been a really good tag team, because I know that sometimes I would torment my partner, Tiffany, not meaning to, but I didn't mean to. I think, as you know, you can kind of get it on each other's nerves, but she's really sweet though. But wow, that would be a great tag team. Thank you for bringing that up. That was great.
Oh, well, once you told Sunday Seattle, I had to ask you the J.P. Patrick question, yes.
But wasn't J.P. like from the 70s or something?
Yeah, oh, he started in the 60s and ran on to the 70s and 80s. Yes.
Yeah, I remember him. And I left Seattle, and was it a local station or something he was on?
Yes, it was. Uh-huh. I think it might have been Cairo. Yes, Cairo.
What was it, Como?
Cairo, K-I-R-O.
Cairo, got it. Okay. Oh, wow, that's great. Yeah, I remember him from the 70s. I mean, I'll give my age away. I was born in 62, so yes, I was there.
Oh,
that's great.
Well, do you remember the Raggedy Ann doll that J.P. had, Esmeralda?
Yes, I do. See, now you're helping put a picture together. That's great. Yes, I do. Uh-huh.
Well, Roxy, your homework assignment can be to go on YouTube and look up J.P. Patch's videos and refresh your mind.
Oh, you know what? I'm already on that. Mentally, you put that in my head. When I get off this call, I'm going to look him up. Is he still alive? Well, what do we know about him?
No, he passed away like when he was 78.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, he was a legend. He was a legend. Do you remember the Wolfman?
I don't remember the Wolfman.
He was on the radio show?
The Wolfman, the DJ, yes.
Yes, yeah, I remember he was from out there, wasn't he? A KJR or something?
I know that he was doing broadcasts, I believe, from near the U.S.-Mexican border, the Wolfman Jack.
As a kid, that he was from Seattle. I thought that's where he was, because I remember I called up KJR, and I won tickets to my first Bob Seger concert, my first concert ever, and he had to be like the 50th caller, and I thought he was right down in Seattle, and I was calling right there. So now I know that that's not true either.
Oh, okay. Well, when you do look up some J.P. Patches after the show, you'll be reminded of his sidekick, Gertrude.
I will definitely. I am like a Google holic, and I will definitely look that up. But thank you so much for bringing that memory up. That's great.
Oh, okay. All right, no problem. Well,
all right. Nice talking to you, QT.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, Ms. Roxy, I know you had kind of a limited time frame you had to be with us here today. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but if there's anything you want to say or plug or promote to our listeners, please go right ahead.
Well, I think, like in the beginning I said, I did a little bit of a tribute on Facebook in regards to Aunt Kitty having her birthday. And she would have been 94 years old. And I'm going to have a shout out to Matilda DeHun, who she's been in the hospital for about a year and a half. And we're working to get her healthy and everything, too. And unfortunately, we lost Becky Mullen, Sally the Farmer's daughter, a month ago. So, you know, this that was very sad. It's just, you know, when we see some of the girls, you know, as we're getting up there in age and things happen, you know, it makes you kind of realize that, you know what, life is short. And, you know, it's just good to, you know, keep everybody around you. So that's it. So not really plugging anything right now, because I'm just kind of sitting back and watching what happens with the world, to be honest. I like doing radio shows like this and keeping out there and meeting new people. So.
Well, we absolutely appreciate you taking time to be with us, and I appreciate the time you did have for us, and best of luck with you guys. Hope Afterglow continues to have all kinds of success for you.
I'm just gonna say, look for the afterglow. That's what I'll end with. How's that? Or I can end with my rap if you want. I can do my rap.
I would love the rap.
Okay, you ready?
Ready.
When you meet with Roxy, you better beware, because I'm really strong and debonair. This jet set girl never backs down, because all she wants is a glow cram. There you go. We'll end with that. How's that?
That's perfect. Thank you very much, Roxy Astor. Fans, definitely check into the Afterglow. Look up Roxy Astor on the YouTube. There's matches from her time with Glow on there. And I think you're going to enjoy what you find on there. And I believe our second guest is ready to come on. So let's introduce the second guest of the day. Two big guests for you today, folks.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Roxy. We appreciate it.
Bye, guys. Bye.
All right, let's bring a second guest on. He is straight out of high school. Dewey Wellington, welcome to the program today.
Thank you for having me. I've been a long-time listener, first-time caller, so I'm excited to be able to talk some wrestling with you today.
Oh, we're definitely happy to have you here. Now, like you heard earlier, we have a traditional first-timers question here. I know that you're actually from a wrestling family background, but can you tell us what led to you personally deciding to get into the wrestling business?
Well, I've always been around the wrestling business. My mom, she did wrestling before he was alive and ended up doing it again right before she passed away. And I've just always been around wrestling. My dad used to actually, like, set up my crib in the locker room. When I was, like, 3 or 4 years old, I was jumping off the top rope doing swantons. My mom tried to stop me, but she wasn't fast enough to stop me from doing those things. And when I was 5 years old, I actually got to manage Kamala in a little promotion in Madison, Indiana. And so, like, wrestling's – I've always been around it. Wrestling's in my blood. Started refereeing when I was 14, and I was refereeing for IWA Mid-South and learning chain wrestling from Winnie and Rotten. And that led me to doing high school wrestling, and I was able to incorporate some of the stuff I was learning from Ian in high school wrestling, and was able to be a very successful high school wrestler. And then after high school, I decided that it's time for me to become a wrestler.
Now, you'd mentioned breaking in when you were 14 in Madison. That company's still growing and still going on today. They have a weekly show there in Madison, as a matter of fact. When you're 14 years old and you're starting out in the wrestling business, how important do you think it was for your growth in the business to be able to go out there weekly, to be able to learn on a weekly basis, as opposed to a lot of guys that might only get to have one or two shows a month?
See, I was thankful enough to be in the IWA locker room at a young age, from age 14, learning from guys like Larry D and Aaron Williams and just a lot of big names today, Sammy Callahan and Jake Chris, and just was able to learn from guys like that week in and week out. And it was because of that that I was able to soak up as much information as I can from guys like that, and that's where I learned a lot of my ring psychology and stuff like that. It's from being able to be in the locker rooms with guys like that and just being able to learn week in and week out.
Now, you made the transition, like you said, from referee to wrestler. I know you had a couple of referee versus referee matches for Supreme Wrestling there in Madison. But when you're making the transition, did you feel totally prepared at that point to get into the active wrestling part of it at that point? Were you a little bit trepidatious having your first few matches that you weren't quite ready?
See, I was lucky enough to where when I decided I was wanting to be a wrestler and become one, I had Two Tough Tonys Wrestling School right across the river from where I'm living at in Louisville. And so I was able enough to go to, lucky enough to be able to go to Two Tough Tonys Grindhouse Pro Wrestling Academy and learn from guys like Rudy Switchblade and learn from guys like Raul Amada and learn from Too Tough Tony. And they definitely, like I said, I've been around wrestling all my life, but they definitely helped me polish up in some of the things that I need to polish on, like my footwork and like my ring psychology and just little things. So I was lucky enough when it came time to have my first match, it was put on at Grindhouse. I felt like I was definitely ready. Now, I had matches before that, but by the time I got to Grindhouse, I felt like I was truly ready to start my career.
You have called yourself straight out of high school. Obviously, you're still a young man, even though you've got several years in the wrestling business. Do you find that when you go out in front of the live crowds that the older fans are still kind of appreciative of a straight out of high school competitor, or do you kind of get a mixed reaction from the fans seeing a guy that's carrying the backpack to the ring and coming straight out of high school into wrestling?
You see, I'm somebody that a lot of people can relate to. A lot of people can relate to the underdog. I see myself as an underdog, and a lot of people can relate to being a small guy or even just relate to being a young kid and following your dreams, because we've all had dreams throughout our lives, and I'm lucky enough to be able to live mine, and people can connect with me on that level. And I stand for a lot of things. Like, I stand for to always stand up to bullies, and because, like, you're going to get picked on for small things, and I've always was picked on by my size. Growing up, I did football, and I was the smallest one on the field. I didn't get to play a lot, but when I was on that field, you knew I was on that field because I made sure I made an impact on that field, and I made sure I was noticed. And it just goes to show that no matter what kind of difficulties or challenges you may have presented in front of you, you can always get over those hurdles and knock down them doors. And when opportunity knocks, you got to answer that door. And I'm just to go back to your question, I'm somebody that a lot of people can relate to, I feel like, or a lot of people understand where I'm coming from.
Glad to hear that. I think absolutely you're an inspiration to a lot of the fans there. Now, you mentioned coming up in IWA Mid-South, and that promotion is known for having a lot of the deathmatch type of bouts on it. They have tournaments that are all death matches. Hardcore wrestling is kind of a niche audience, although it is largely popular with that niche audience.
Right.
How do you feel about the hardcore matches?
Well, you see, you said IWA is known for death matches and or deathmatch wrestling, but you got to understand deathmatch wrestling still has the word wrestling in it. And that's what's so great about IWA is, yes, you go there and you're going to have some of the ultra-violent matches, but you're still going to have amazing matches put on, wrestling clinics put on by the guys like Ace Perry and Jake Crist and Kevin Giza and Logan James. And you're also going to have those death matches with guys like Dale Patrick and Nick Gage and people along the lines of that. So you never know who's going to show up in IWA Mid-South, and that's why you should go whenever you can, every time they have a show, because you're always going to get something wonderful, and you're always going to have a little bit of, like, kind of like a buffet. Like, everybody's going to be satisfied at an IWA show.
One of the promotions that was picking up a lot of steam right before the pandemic sort of put a halt to live wrestling for most places was the NWA. They put their shows on YouTube, and they've been gaining a lot of fan interest, a lot of traction going into their pay-per-view that was ultimately canceled right before the pandemic hit. Have you been following the NWA and what they have been doing as a promotion? Is it kind of a place that would interest you in going?
It would interest me in going just because, like, I notice you're doing their own thing and they're different. So that would definitely be somewhere that I'm interested in going. I'm always looking to be able to hone my craft and get to that next level, no matter what that next level may be for me. But I'm always looking for ways to improve and ways to hone my craft and really get my trade in and being able to do what I love to do on a bigger scale.
Now, the history of the NWA dates back over 100 years. The NWA, of course, founded decades and decades ago. It's sort of changed from what it once was, but it's still a recognized name. And even just as recently as about 5 years ago, a lot of independent companies were part of the NWA under the last ownership. I believe you actually were with Supreme Wrestling when they were part of an NWA affiliate. Do you personally kind of study the history of wrestling like the NWA and all the territorial wrestling, or do you kind of focus on more modern type of wrestling?
Well, my dad made me go back and watch wrestling like the NWA and learn about the territories and learn where we came from and how wrestling evolved to what it is today. So I don't want to say I was kind of forced to go back because I enjoyed watching that type of wrestling, especially like that's old school for me. But you got to think, old school for me is like WCW when it first started, or ECW. Like, that's a lot of the stuff that I like to watch because it's kind of old school to me, but not really old school enough to be called old school to somebody like my dad, because my dad, he grew up watching that. But I like to study a lot of the WCW cruiserweights, and I like to study the WWF light heavyweights. I've been studying guys like Billy Kidman, and I've been studying guys like Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio when they was in WCW. I've been watching guys like the 1-2-3 Kid and how he evolved from that to X-Pac. And just, I like studying that, but I will occasionally go back and watch something like the old school NWA and stuff like that as well.
One of the more popular parts in wrestling is historically, especially on the independent circuit, I feel like, has been the patriotic base gimmicks. We see a lot of guys that go out there with flag and they have the red, white, and blue if they're American. You see a lot of red and white if it's a Canadian patriot gimmick. But historically, that has been kind of a popular gimmick to use, and almost every promotion at one point had someone on the roster to fill that role. Do you think that the patriot gimmick is still something that is relevant and is drawing in 2020, or do you think that fans have kind of moved past that, just blindly supporting the patriot gimmick?
It's all in the eyes of the beholder, in that sense. So depending on how you do it and where you do it is going to be important. And the display, the manner that you display it in, is going to be important. I'm not saying that it won't get over or it won't draw. You just got to do it right. And you got to learn, like, you got to learn what made it work back then to be able to learn what's going to make it work now. But I do believe that gimmicks like that could still get over today, especially overseas, or here in the home state as, like, a patriot, or somebody going overseas and playing the American bad guy, or something similar to that role. But yes, I do believe if it's done right, it's something that could still be relevant today.
Now, you broke in, like we had said earlier, as a referee, and you did that for quite a while. Do you think that breaking in as a referee, even though you came from a wrestling family already and you had a bit of an advantage there, but do you feel like working as a referee for as long as you did sort of gave you a better understanding and a bigger advantage to succeed when you started wrestling than if you had gone straight to pro wrestler, or if you'd done another role before getting into the wrestling aspect of the business?
I definitely feel like becoming a referee first definitely gave me an advantage when I started to train, because being a referee got to give me another perspective, another set of eyes on how things are done, and I got to also learn locker room etiquette and how to speak and what to say when I am speaking, or how to listen to constructive criticism and things like that. So it definitely prepared me in that aspect. And I got to learn a lot of things, and I got to travel just doing what I love, being in locker rooms, listening to vets and listening to guys with a lot of experience and just picking up on the little things and just listening to the stories on road trips and just being, like I said, just being able to travel and being able to feel that from an early age. So I knew what I was getting myself into as a wrestler. And I just loved it. I loved every aspect of it. And that's why I started out as a referee, because I wanted to start as soon as I could. And that was my early way in, was to be a referee. So as soon as I turned old enough, I was a referee because I just wanted to be involved in wrestling any way that I could. I went from being the cameraman to being a referee to being a wrestler to running the backstage switchboard and learning how to do production stuff. And like I said, I just love every aspect of wrestling, so I want to indulge in anything that I can get my hands into. So I definitely feel like being a referee helped me in a lot of ways.
Well, at this point, my co-host QT is with us, and he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things to him.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Sun Guy. Hello, Dewey. Well, welcome on to the show, finally.
Yes, it's been a long time coming. We've been trying to do this for a hot minute, but my work schedule has just been getting shifted around a lot. But I'm definitely glad I'm able to do this today.
Well, Dewey, we just had on Roxy Astor. She broke in the 80s with the GLOW Women of Wrestling. However, unfortunately, due to time constraints, I did not have time to ask her all the questions that I had written down.
Okay.
However, for the first time ever on the Turnbuckle Turmoil show, I'm going to ask a guest to take the role of a former guest telepathically and ask him some of the questions I was going to ask Roxy Astor. Are you now willing to take on the role of Roxy Astor in a groundbreaking Turnbuckle Turmoil telepathic show, where you take on the role of a wrestler?
That's a lot. That's some big shoes to fill. I mean, I would be honored to. I don't know. It's a, like I said, it's big shoes to fill. But like I said, I'm always down for whatever and looking to make a big impact. So let's do this.
Okay, I think that these questions that I was going to ask her about some video I saw of her GLOW match against Beastie could apply to you. Now, for the first time ever, I welcome our fans, the first telepathic show ever, including Dewey Wellington. Thank you for your cooperation. Miss Astor Wellington, I saw your YouTube video entitled Beastie the Road Warrior versus Roxy Astor Wellington, the Park Avenue Knockout. And when Beastie sang her rap song before the match, it sounded like the Tasmanian Devil on the Bugs Bunny cartoons. I could hardly understand a word. But when you, Dewey Wellington Astor, came out and you rapped, "Now that you know my name is Roxy, it's obvious that I'm rich and foxy. In the ring, there's no one faster, because they can't beat Roxy Astor." And in parentheses, Wellington. My first question is, at the time of your rap, were you influenced by the early rap pioneers like Deborah Harry from the rock group Blondie with their pioneering rap song, Rapture, or maybe the Beastie Boys, Dad Rock and Mike D?
I was definitely influenced by a couple of different bands, and I just wanted to try to give like the best performance that I could to the fans, and so I took a lot of inspiration from what was popular then and just tried to apply that to what I was going to sing about.
Oh, okay. Very good. Okay. Miss Roxy Wellington, are there any truths to the rumors that at one point, Beastie the Road Warrior planned to form a rap duet with George the Animal Steel?
I would like to have no comment on that situation, and until further notice. But that is a very interesting question to come and ask me, to say the least.
Well, okay, because it's rumored that George the Animal Steele, when he was on, he could put together three words in a row. Yes. Okay. Well, Miss Roxy Wellington, one of the announcers said, "I haven't seen the Park Avenue girl this determined since they told her they couldn't raise the limit on her credit card." My question is, who were they? Were they the manager and assistant manager of the Bank of America at Park Avenue, New York?
Oh, you know who they were. They were Bossman. You know who Bossman is. Bossman is the one who pays the checks. So I feel very, very confident that you know who they are.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been hit with a couple of share shot recently, share shots. Actually, it's an inflatable share shot. It's rubberized material with it. The impact isn't too, but I would have forgot that. Yes. Okay. Okay. Miss Roxy Wellington, Beastie went airborne from the middle turnbuckle at the 3:15 and a half mark of the match, and 1/2 second later, if you freeze the video of your match with Beastie at the 3:16 mark, you can see Beastie on her descent to you on the canvas. My question is, seeing Beastie in flight reminds me of the Married with Children episode where Big Mama took off from the top turnbuckle on her way to body slash Al Bundy on an episode with Married with Children. Now, do you remember seeing this seminal moment in Married with Children history when Al Bundy got body splashed by Big Mama?
Indeed, I do.
Okay. Well, now I bring this video up also because it reminds me of a young wrestler, Dewey Wellington, when he was at the Emerson Theater. And he had a metal chair placed on an opponent in the ring, and he called for a fan to hand him a ladder, and he climbed up to the fifth rung of this ladder, and he jumped from the fifth rung of this ladder. Have you seen this Dewey Wellington take off from the fifth rung of a ladder at Hoosier Wrestling Alliance?
Oh, I have. I have indeed.
Oh, okay. What was the sound of that impact with that wrestler that was laid out with a steel chair on his chest? And who was the wrestler with the steel chair on his chest?
The wrestler with the steel chair on his chest was one Miles Morales. And I could not really make out the guttural noises that he made when Dewey Wellington could make impact with him.
Oh, okay. Wow, all right. Okay. Well, now, Dewey, many young men out of high school delay their careers, of course, getting into wrestling. Well, actually, that's not true. They were inspired by a young age. Were there any high school teachers that inspired you also and gave you words of encouragement? Or maybe there were some classes that you took in high school that you might fall back on, like wood shop or electricity, if wrestling doesn't work out. First, any teachers that inspired you? That's what I'm getting at.
I had my sociology teacher, Mr. Perigo. He liked wrestling a lot, and he's actually came to Jerusalem to watch me wrestle at one IWA Mid-South. And we'd always talk about wrestling, and he always said that he's seen a lot in me, and he sees a lot of potential in me. And he was also a Game of Thrones fan. And a lot of people don't know that my character at Grindhouse Pro Wrestling Academy, Prince Wellington, was inspired off of Prince Joffrey. And so we would sit in class and talk about things for me to say during my matches or how to act during my matches. And he helped me out a lot with that, along with my dad. And also, as far as the classes aspect, I took a lot of things to help me in wrestling, actually. Like, I took business marketing, and I took business economics to learn how to market myself as a brand, and how to do things like merch and how to sell my merch and just how to make myself marketable. And I'm actually applying to go to a trade school here real soon to be an electrician in case, like I said, the dream is to be able to do wrestling for a lifetime or have wrestling pay me, pay for a house for me, or just be able to live comfortably off of wrestling. But in case that doesn't work, or when I get up into my 40s and 50s and need something else besides wrestling because I can't wrestle no more, or God forbid something happens, I'm able to fall back on being an electrician.
Okay, electrician. Do you think you'll maybe set up your own electrical company maybe when you're in your 30s? Electrical company, engineering.
Oh, that would be that would be nice, and that would be a nice goal to set for myself. But like I said, for right now, it's going to school and putting all my time and any of my spare time that I can into wrestling or studying wrestling or trying to make my character evolve or trying to set myself up for success, taking seminars or doing whatever I can to learn more about wrestling.
Oh, okay. Now, have you ever done a promo from your backyard in a hammock?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. Was that the AWR promo, and can you see it on YouTube?
Yes, you can. You can see a lot of things on YouTube if you just been do it along in wrestling. I have my own channel on there, as well as other videos that people have posted of my matches. So if you can find it on YouTube, or you can even find it on IWTV or High Spots Network. So there's a lot of places where you can find some Dewey Ellington material.
Have you ever heard of a Midwest wrestler named Sugar Dunkerton? Sugar Dunkerton.
Yes, I have. I love Sugar D. I've studied him a lot in MPPW. And I've watched a lot of his stuff in MLW, and he's a very, very good person to watch for character and learn how to be a character, as well as a tremendous in-ring worker.
Do you believe you could beat him in a game of one-on-one in basketball? That's what I'm asking.
No. No, not a chance. Not a chance.
Oh, okay. Well, Dewey, who will you face on Sunday, September 27th, for a New Wave Pro Wrestling event, Complex Chaos? Can you tell us who you think your opponent will be?
At this time, I cannot speculate on that at all. All I could say is look out for some updates on their Facebook page. And make sure you just follow along on my Facebook page or on my wrestling page, The Kid Dewey Ellington, for any updates on Complex Wrestling.
Now, Dewey, do you prefer tag team or singles competition?
I myself prefer singles competition because, like, I'm more of a singles competitor, but I always will team up with somebody to get the job done or conspire with somebody to do something big or whatever it may be. So I like being a singles competitor and doing my own thing, but if the time comes, I wouldn't be hesitant to have a tag partner.
Now, if you in the near future, if you do tag with someone, could that team that you have your eye on be the Young Dragons, who are comprised of Josh Crane and Dale Patricks?
That would be a very interesting match if I had a tag team partner to go against the Young Dragons. That would be a good match. I would probably, it would probably have to be a street fight, knowing Dale Patricks and Josh Crane. So I'd have to find somebody who likes to brawl. Likes to fight just as much as I do, and somebody who's not afraid to get in that match with the intent to commit bodily harm, and somebody who's not afraid to use her body like a weapon, as I do.
All right, now, speaking of weapons, What's the hardest you've ever been hit with a kendo stick?
Oh, geez. I've been hit pretty hard with a kendo stick out of EA Mid-South. I've been hit pretty hard with a kendo stick at Grindhouse Pro Wrestling. But, yeah, kendo sticks are no joke, man. Kendo sticks are no joke.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Dewey, have any fans held up any Dewey Wellington signs that have made you stop mid-promo or mid-performance and made you laugh, such as R. Kelly rode a bicycle for two with Dewey Wellington to his first day in Indiana State Prison, something like that?
No, I have not experienced that, but I have experienced a lot of fan art and a lot of fans making me signs, and I always feel important, or I always feel loved when I see my fans tagging me in pictures of fan art that they made, or I get mailed some fan art, or they show up with signs or pictures or even things that they've made for me or for themselves for me to sign. And whenever I'm in a match or I come out for a promo and I see signs like that, I always make sure to kind of give them a wink and a nod, or I always try to make sure I acknowledge them because my fans are important to me. It's how I make my living. If it wasn't for the fans, I wouldn't be where I'm at today.
Wow, very good. Okay. Of course, when you make your entrance, that lays your groundwork for capturing the fans' imagination. What's your number one entrance music song that you've had? I think we earlier covered the Beastie Boys and stuff.
My theme song that I love to come out to is Tum Thumper by Chumbawamba, just because people don't expect a 19-year-old kid come out to Chumbawamba Tum Thumper. And it describes me, like, yes, I might get knocked down, but I'm going to get back up again. And I've learned that from a very young age. Like I said, I played football when I was younger, and I've always made sure to go out and hit the biggest and the fastest or the tallest kid. And when I was on that field, people always knew that I was on that field. And when I was in wrestling, it was the same way. I was the smallest guy on the team, but I always made sure to carry my weight. I always made sure to go on that mat and get a pin. And just like in wrestling today, I'm not afraid to use my body as a weapon. I'm not afraid to come at you with everything I got. Yeah, you may knock me down, but I'm going to get back up, and then I'm going to knock you down. Then we're going to see what's what. And so that song always just inspires me to always keep going and show that I can and will make it in this business today. And along with my entrance, I love coming out with my back and showing guys that, yeah, I am straight out of high school, and I'm here to show you what's what. And I love going through the fans and having the fans sing my song with me. I get knocked down, but I get up again. Yeah, you're never going to keep me down. I love feeling that energy from the fans and just being able to go through the fans and high-five everybody from the front row to the back row. It just involves the fans in it, make sure that they know they're just as hard as this as I am, and just being able to share that love for wrestling through my entrance and through my performance and through my match. It's what I love.
Wow. Well, I might have a song for you that you might consider to use in the future. It's I've Got Those Dental Floss Blues by Bleeding Gums Murphy, a blues pioneer. Oh, okay. Well, at this time.
I think I'm going to stick with Tum Thumping for just a little bit while.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Dewey, I would like to congratulate you of the first ever Turnbuckle Turmoil telepathic role-playing where you took on the role of Miss Astor, Roxy Astor. You did very well in this telepathic segment. And at this time, I'm turning it back over to Sungai.
Awesome.
Yes, very well. Back to you, Sungai.
Thank you, QT. Well, Dewey, we're getting close to the end of the show here, so I want to give you ample time if there's anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything you'd like, social media, merchandise, upcoming shows, your favorite restaurant, anything at all, floor is all yours.
Alrighty, you can find my clips on YouTube, just search in Dewey Wellington Wrestling. You can find some clips on the YouTube or on IWTV. If you don't have an IWTV subscription, you can get a discount by using IWTV/IWAMS. That's IWAMS for IWA Mid-South. You can follow me on Instagram at the Kid Dewey Wellington, or on Facebook as the Kid Dewey Wellington, as well as Twitter, the Kid Dewey Wellington. Yeah, and as far as my next shows, unfortunately, I was supposed to have a show tomorrow, but I tweaked my ankle during training, and I won't be able to make it, unfortunately. But it is BMFX Wrestling in Lafayette, Indiana, and I have a lot of big things coming at the end of September next month. So a lot of big things coming. Just be on the lookout on my Facebook page for that. And like I said, Complex Wrestling coming up. Just be on the lookout for that as well. And just always stay humble and, yeah, just try to follow up on all my social media.
Absolutely. Dewey, thank you very much for joining us today. Absolutely had a pleasure having you on here. Good luck as you continue with the career, and I hope that ankle heals for you 100%.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It was a pleasure being on.
All right, fans, definitely, if Dewey's going to be on a show near you, buy yourself a ticket. Follow him on the social medias. He is just getting started. He's going to have a bright, bright future. Now, here at the end of the show, we'll run through some shows. If you're looking for some wrestling, there's some out there. Tonight, WCWO in Indianapolis, PWAS in Detroit, Michigan, TPW in Sherman, Texas, RSW in Morgantown, West Virginia. Tomorrow night, you can find myself at Stateline, Idaho for Northwest Pro, NFW in Evansville, Indiana, Supreme Wrestling in Madison, Indiana, CIW in Hudson, Michigan, Black Label Pro in Crown Point, Indiana, NWP in Terre Haute, Indiana, the aforementioned BMFX in Lafayette, Indiana, UWE in Cadillac, Michigan, TAPW in Morrison, Tennessee, PWK in South Bend, Indiana, WPW in Des Peres, Wisconsin, SCW in Rock Island, Illinois, Black Wrestlers Matter Show in Des Moines, Iowa, RRW in Bristol, Tennessee, RCW in Calgary, Alberta, Excite Wrestling in Johnson City, New York, NHEW in Malvern, Arkansas, and LPWG tomorrow night in Forsyth, Georgia. So hopefully everyone will be able to make it to a show if they're feeling safe enough to do so. You can find me tomorrow night at Northwest Pro, so if you're in the area of Post Falls, make sure you come on over to Charlie's Bar, where we'll be starting at 3 p.m. We'll be back with you on Sunday afternoon. We have my boss, promoter Yvonne Siever, with us. So make sure you plan on being with us Sunday, and we will talk to you soon.